Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Frank Lloyd Wright, all of the nights we harmonized till dawn. Architects make a man, architects make a when, never change your point of view.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today's journey on Route 51 takes us from the colonial splendor of Thomas Jefferson's Monticello to the Gilded Age mansions of the Vanderbilts in Newport in the Hudson River Valley, to the open, earth-themed Frank Lloyd Wright homes of the Heartland, to the soaring West Coast San Simeon estate of William Randolph Hearst, and back home again to our own architectural wonders in central Wisconsin. Our tour guide today is world-renowned architectural historian Richard Guy Wilson, whose University of Virginia was founded by architect and president Thomas Jefferson, and whose commentary has graced the airwaves of PBS, Arts and Entertainment, C-SPAN, and more than 60 segments of the critically acclaimed program America's Castles. Richard Guy Wilson will be giving a free public lecture on the subject of preserving our historical treasures next Wednesday, October 2nd, at one of Wausau's greatest architectural treasures, the Grand Theater, to help kick off its capital campaign. Joining our conversation today, Jim O'Connell, Executive Director of the Performing Arts Foundation, and Mary Roberts, a community volunteer with the Grand Theater Foundation. We'll look at other architectural treasures also in the next hour, the Woodson and Yawkey homes, the Fromm Estate, the Wausau Club, and more. And as always, we invite you to join the conversation. Our phone lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Richard Guy Wilson is joining us by telephone. Richard, thank you so much for making your time available to us today.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here. Online.
And Jim and Mary, good to have you here as well. And Richard, you're appearing October 2nd at the Grand Theater for the kickoff of its capital campaign. It's a free presentation, open to the public, this next Wednesday evening. What are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to talk about why one should preserve architecture, why architecture is important, what are the possible meanings, both in a international context, but then also referring specifically to buildings of Wausau and other buildings in Wisconsin.
Why were you interested in doing the Grand Theater show?
Well, I visited Wausau a few years ago and gave a talk and was able to, as I always do, wander around town and take pictures, and I did notice the building along with others, some other wonderful buildings there. And so anyway, when Mary asked me, I said, sure, I'd be glad to come back.
Now Mary Roberts, the appearance that Richard is talking about, that was back in 2008, correct?
Yes, that is correct. He was here in 2008.
And what was he here for?
He was here to help us kick off the fund drive for the restoration of the Yawkey House. And we achieved our goal of raising $3 million, and actually we ended up with $4 million, so we have $1 million for an endowment.
And that's currently the site of the Marathon County Historical Society Museum, correct?
Yes, the House Museum.
Richard, you've done this before. You've come into town, you've helped us restore some of our beautiful old buildings, and you're doing it again.
Well, yes, I hope so.
Jim, how significant is it that Richard is appearing for the kickoff of this capital campaign? And again, here we've got a guy who's world renowned. He's an absolute expert on the architectural wonders around the country and in Europe, all over the world, and he's appearing in an event that's open to the public free of charge. That's something else.
It certainly is, and it's really terrific from our perspective, Glenn, that Richard joins a host of luminaries that have appeared at the Grand Theater. B.B. King, Aretha Franklin, Itzhak Perlman, the Blue Man Group. He fits right in as a clear example of his genre. We promise that what you'll find at the Grand is a superb example of whatever it is that we're presenting. And we're delighted to add Richard to that roster.
Richard, you're not going to be wearing blue face paint on Wednesday night, are you?
Well, I'm still working on my costume right now. So I'll probably be a little more subdued. But I'll try and wear a wild bow tie.
All right, yeah. You're famous for the bow ties. Jim, what are you trying to accomplish with this campaign?
Well, the fact is that we invested, the community was extraordinarily generous, and we invested $13 million in expanding the Grand Theater into a regional performance center. It opened 11 years ago. A lot of people can't think it was much shorter time than that. But 11 years ago, in 2002, we reopened the facility, renovated, restored, and expanded. And in that time, we've had more than 5,000 scheduled activities in the building. We've had more than 1 million people come through the building. That shows that it is well considered, it is well used, and if we're not careful, it'll be used up, because buildings have a life, and as Richard knows, it takes continued investment to extend the life of these wonderful buildings, particularly when they're public buildings in the sense that the Grand Theater is a place for celebration, entertainment, and education in central Wisconsin.
Well, this is actually the second renovation for the Grand Theater. The one that happened in 2002 was a whole arts block project where you expanded it on one side and opened it up to the Center for Visual Arts on the other. But at one point, this beautiful old theater, this old movie palace, opera house, whatever you want to call it, it could have been torn down.
In the mid to late 70s, the 1,200-seat movie theaters were no longer economically viable. And the question became whether the Grand Theater would be torn down. But a tremendous group headed by the late Dick Dudley, actually, put together a capital campaign and raised about $2.3 million to preserve the building as a performing arts center. And it reopened in 1987.
And Mary, you were involved with that. You're involved with the capital campaign. Now, comment on how significant that was, that we were able to save the Grand Theater and even expand it a few years ago.
Well, it's absolutely fabulous. So many people, regardless of their age, have memories of attending movies there, or, you know, with some much older people, maybe going to the opera house. And the fact that it is more or less the centerpiece of our downtown is really significant. When people from out of the area come in, they always ask, what is that big building? And is it, what's in there? Is it still open?
Hey, Richard, the Grand Theater was saved and renovated. How significant is that? I imagine you've seen a lot of beautiful old buildings like that that end up falling to the wrecking ball.
Yes. Well, it's unfortunately, there's lots of different sorts of buildings that we are rapidly losing across the country, whether it's churches, schools, theaters in particular seem to be a very endangered architectural species, in the sense that, in many cases, moved to the suburbs, moved out into multiplexes, that type of thing, and you have these, unfortunately, decaying buildings that are in the downtowns. And, of course, what they are, they're important in several ways. One level is that they are the presence of them, just simply architecturally, the style that they're also centers for community.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think, another issue that we are facing in this country to some degree, is the decaying of community in many cases. And the bowling alone, a book that was done a number of years ago, but about this this phenomenon that's taking place. And of course, that was written really before the iPhone took off and that sort of thing, which has, I think, further increased it.
Well,
so a theater is a place where you can bring people together as a community.
And again, it's something that also, as Jim was just saying, you have an old building like that. You can't just renovate it once and then let it sit. It takes it takes constant care and attention.
Yes, yes, definitely. I mean, that's the problem with buildings are like us. They do age. Hopefully, they don't totally disappear. But
hopefully, they age gracefully.
Yes, right.
Richard Guy Wilson, you grew up in California. It's the land where everything is new. Nothing in history is cherished or preserved. Your childhood home, I read in your biography, was designed by the modernist Rudolf Schindler. How, with that background, did you become an architectural historian with this love you have for really old buildings?
Well, let me just say that while Los Angeles and California is known as everything new, they are actually preserving older buildings, and indeed my parents' house is on the National Register and is recognized as a landmark. It was done in the 1930s. Yeah, I grew up, my parents were total modern art freaks of the worst order, commissioning that and several other houses which I grew up with. And looking back, I can see the line that I've taken, because I do teach modern architecture as well, not just old architecture, but I couldn't figure it out. What really happened was that I went in the Navy and went to Officers Candidate School in Newport, Rhode Island, and then my ship was home ported out of there. And in addition to meeting my wife there, I also met all of this older architecture and really became entranced by it, and so one thing led to another, and I wound up getting my PhD, and when I told my mom that I was going to study a firm of architects called McKim, Mead & White, which was a big, very traditional firm of the turn of the last century, she said, "Where have we gone wrong?"
Oh, you wrote a book on them, correct?
Yeah, right. But, as I say, I'm actually pretty much AC/DC on this. I admire all sorts of different things, from very, very contemporary buildings to buildings that are very, very old.
Well, you're still active. You teach at the University of Virginia, but you still do some teaching in Rhode Island. Mary, you studied with Richard in Providence.
Yes, I did, and it was a wonderful experience because we got to tour and study and highlight all the fabulous mansions along Cliff Walk. So the setting is wonderful with the Atlantic Ocean and the cliff and the fabulous Vanderbilt homes. I especially liked Doris Duke's home. It was called Rough Point, and it was just a magnificent experience, and I understand why Richard became entranced, and I think maybe I have as well.
And Richard, you're at the University of Virginia now. It was, of course, founded by Thomas Jefferson, who was himself an architect. How has that influenced you in the way you view architecture?
It's had a profound effect. Jefferson designed the University of Virginia beginning, and he'd had the idea around for a number of years, but he began really sort of working on plans in 1814, and they broke ground in 1817, and it was nearly complete when he passed away on July 4th, 1826.
And isn't it true that he was prouder of that university than he was of everything he did as president?
Yes. On his tombstone at Monticello, this is Mr. Control, he said exactly what it was to be, and here lies Thomas Jefferson, author of the American Declaration of Independence, the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, and author of the and father of the University of Virginia. There's nothing about, which I think most of us have put on, that you were a governor or a vice president or secretary of state or president. No, it's two major political slant intellectual achievements and then an institution to, in a sense, carry out, I think, some of those ideas.
And he was a big believer in public education. In fact, he felt without an educated public, the American experiment in democracy would fail.
Right. In 1779, while he was governor of Virginia, right in the heart of the Revolution, with the British rampaging up and down and through Virginia, he was governor at that time, he did introduce into the state legislature a bill for the education of the populace. And it was a three-tiered system of what we would call an elementary, today elementary, secondary, and then there would be a state college or university. It was introduced into the legislature, as I say. I mean, you know, this is, I mean, we didn't even know if we were going to win the damn revolution, if you understand, and so forth, and yet he introduces this. I think it shows a confidence and a foresight. And
so, in a sense, he was the father of our public school systems all across the country by the example he set. And what I find ironic, now everybody claims Thomas Jefferson, right? Liberals claim him, conservatives claim him, but there are a lot of anti-government, anti-public education people who claim Thomas Jefferson as their mentor, and they're simply way off base. I mean, he was the biggest supporter of public free education in our history.
Definitely, no. I mean, he got a reputation of that, and so there is a long sequence of letters from people in Tennessee and in Ohio. He actually, while he was president, tried to establish a national university on the Mall in Washington, D.C. It came to naught. But no, he's the foundation stone of the idea that you have to have an educated populace if you're going to have a democracy. Or a republic.
Can you work at the University of Virginia and not be a Jefferson file? Is that possible?
Well, I kid the students that they're going to get a little sick and tired of hearing about him after a while. But no, I think that is. It's an intellectual achievement and it's an architectural achievement. What he attempted, he had a very specific ideas that they developed over years, but he had very specific ideas, and a really key element of his concept of education was that the environment in which you are educated is as important as the professor or the instructor blabbing away in the classroom, that you learn from your environment as well. And so, I mean, we don't need to go through this all, but he put out, I mean, on the lawn at the University of Virginia, which is the central portion, there's all of these different architectural elements that are presented there. And the idea is that this is, you know, that your education isn't just simply reading or listening, but it is a visual education as well.
And you wrote a guidebook for the University of Virginia with descriptions of all those buildings and how significant they were for the campus.
Yes, right.
And is it true that President Bush, George W. Bush, asked you to speak at the White House on Jefferson's birthday?
Yes. Yes, no, I spoke there. And, I've spoken to the White House twice, actually, over the years. And, as I say, Jefferson is this everybody talks about him as a Renaissance person, and that's very right. He's a multi-talented. I mean, he's very interested in archaeology. As far as we know, the first archaeological dig ever done in this country was done there in Charlottesville, of digging up an Indian mound. He's very interested in botany, biology, plants, farming. Modern technology.
Fossils, too. One of the reasons he sent Lewis and Clark out were to see if mastodons and mammoths, they had these old bones, if they still lived somehow out west.
Yes, no, definitely. And, I mean, those portions of them appear in the front hall at Monticello, which he remodeled, and one can make a slight argument that that is actually one of the very first museums in this country.
Tell us a little bit about Jefferson's home, Monticello. Let's bring this back to architecture. I could talk about Thomas Jefferson all day, as I'm sure you could.
Well, Monticello is built on a little hill across the Rivanna River from where he was born. And he was born in 1743. Unfortunately, the house burned in 1768, I think it is. But he planned across the river and up on top of a hill where he was going to build Monticello. Very bluntly, it was a little impractical. Most houses at that point in time didn't go on top of hills. They went down below because you do have problems with water and so forth. But he very much wanted his building up there. And he initially planned a building which was pretty much all built by 1782, when he started on 1768, and it went on and on and on for years, different sorts of things. Pretty much completed by 1782 when his wife Martha died.
Mm-hmm.
And that broke him up, needless to say, very considerably. And so he then, 1784, he becomes the American consul, or today we would call the ambassador, to the court of Louis the XVI in Paris. And so he lives abroad for 5 years. Then he comes back in 1789 to become Secretary of State in the Washington administration. And it's shortly thereafter that he begins remodeling the house up there and taking down a portion of it, making additions, and creating what we all know today from the back of the Nickel, the domed structure. But the original building was not a domed structure. It was a rather different two-story portico.
Well, let's talk about the dark side just for a second. Monticello as an estate wouldn't have functioned without slavery.
Right.
I mean, isn't that true? I mean, we've got this idealized view of Jefferson as a great advocate for human freedom, but in his lifetime, he owned more than 600 human beings as slaves, and the Smithsonian recently published an expose with evidence that he even had slave boys as young as the age of 9 whipped in his nail factory.
Well, there is some controversy on the accuracy of some of that information. Let me just say that.
Okay.
And yes, he was a slave owner. There's no doubt about that. It's a dark side of him, and it's a very bad side of him. And I am not trying to excuse it. At the same time, we have to look at what was the context of the time then.
And he was torn by that.
He was. He was, very definitely. And indeed, in the original Declaration of Independence, that was the original copy of it, they are to be free. This is in 1775. He writes that all the slaves are to be free. But that was turned down by other people that were on the committee at the convention there for the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia, and so that did not happen. And and it became a he ultimately, yes, he goes along with slavery because that's where a lot of his money is. And as I say, I'm not trying to excuse
right.
it. I'm just trying to put it in context of that point in time. But in general, he is actually known, in spite of what this thing said, he is known as one of the better, much more benevolent slave owner. And the problem was, for instance, when Washington dies in 1779, he frees all his slaves.
Yeah.
And it's always been a question, why didn't Jefferson? Well, the real problem was that Jefferson was so heavily in debt, so much in debt, that there were a group of the slaves that were freed. No, overall it was not.
Well, you write as individuals, as a country, and as a culture, Americans have many histories, yet the dominant view of the United States past, and by far the most popular view, revolves around the colonial era. And you point to colonial influences in contemporary culture and architecture, landscapes, garden design, furniture, painting, fiction, poetry, music, film, dance, even ads for beer.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
and then we had this colonial revival, which started back in the 1820s. Now, many of us would look back at that and think that the 1820s were too close to the colonial era to even be part of a revival. You know,
yes,
but maybe that's our modern perspective.
Keep in mind that we were the youngest, quote, the youngest country, and there was a real issue of what was our history. And so you do begin to get very, very early on the creation of a mythical type of past. It actually starts even before this. The 1820s is when portions of Independence Hall are restored and the tower is put back up there, and it's a much larger tower than what was there originally. There was an event that took place in 1786 in Jefferson's house in Paris, where John Trumbull, comes to visit him. He's an American painter who was studying in London, and then he comes over to Paris to visit Jefferson. He begins painting the classic scene of the presentation of the Declaration of Independence to the convention in Philadelphia. And it starts right there. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that it is certainly to some degree fictitious, but you can guess who is the central figure in the painting. A guy with red hair, Thomas Jefferson. And, of course, he's leaning right over Trumbull's shoulder and telling him this is what you're supposed to do and so forth.
Now, are there any examples of colonial revival buildings in central Wisconsin, say in Wausau? Are we too late for that?
Oh, no, no. Well, colonial revival still goes on today. No, no. I mean, the Yockley House, the Wausau Club, they're what I would call colonial revival on the exteriors of those.
And Mary, to bring things back to central Wisconsin here, Richard Guy Wilson was very active in getting the Yawkey House, a colonial revival example, restored.
Yes, he was. And he came to Wausau and assisted us and was kind enough to be our main speaker to kick off our $3 million drive in order to restore the Yawkey House. Yes, yes, he did. And he was very popular, very well received. So we're expecting the same.
And Jim O'Connell?
It's quite daunting, actually, to be following in the footsteps of such a successful project as the Yockey House restoration. That is such an extraordinarily beautiful piece of work. The difference between, however, the Yockey House and the Grand Theater is that the Yockey House was restored to represent the time in which it was built, whereas the Grand Theater has been restored twice now, in 1987 and then in 2002, to bring us into the future. And it's the continuing ability of that building to bring us into new futures that we are attempting to preserve with the fundraising that is starting now.
And again, that fundraising event is Wednesday, October 2nd, that evening at the Grand Theater. Richard Guy Wilson, who we're talking to today, is going to be part of it. It's free. It's open to the public. It's your chance to see this world-renowned historian who many of you have seen on over 60 episodes of American Castles, on PBS, on Arts and Entertainment, on the History Channel, on C-SPAN. Richard Guy Wilson is with us today, as is Jim O'Connell, as is Mary Roberts, who are trying to continue the preservation of the Grand Theater. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Tonight, down here in the valley, I'm lonesome and oh, how I feel. As I sit here alone in my cabin, I can see your mansion on the hill.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Peninsula Players, Ganschert Nursery, and Marshfield Clinic, proud supporters of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support for WPR comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, welcoming the return of birds and art. See 125 all-new birds and artworks now through November 10th, along with five exhibitions from the museum's collection. More at lywam.org.
And we're going to be talking about the Fromm Brothers Estate in Hamburg in just a second with our guest, Richard Guy Wilson, renowned architect. He's a guy who holds the Commonwealth Professor's Chair of Architectural History at the University of Virginia. You may have seen him on America's Castles and other appearances on PBS, Arts and Entertainment, the History Channel. Also, Jim O'Connell, the Executive Director of the Performing Arts Foundation, and Mary Roberts, community volunteer with the Grand Theater Foundation. And if you just joined us, Richard is going to be appearing free of charge for a presentation to kick off the Grand Theater's capital campaign this coming Wednesday evening, October 2nd, at the Grand Theater. And Mary Roberts, it's a free presentation, but, you know, It's casual, but you're not going to turn down donations, correct?
No, we are accepting donations that night, of course, and hopefully people will look around and say, you know, what a fabulous treasure. We need to preserve this, and if they, you know, don't donate that night, they will when they receive a pledge card or they'll see other publicity. But I wanted to stress that, of course, as we did, that it is free and be followed by a nice reception with a cash bar and complimentary hors d'oeuvres and the opportunity to meet Richard and talk with Richard and other friends. And there are people out there who have never been to the Grand Theater or haven't been for years. So this is their chance to just come. All are welcome, and you're welcome to bring a guest or your spouse or grandma or whomever and attend. And it's fine if you dress up, or it's fine if you come in blue jeans and are casual. And there are some people who like to come to the Grand and dress up a bit, wear that special dress from the closet or a hat they've been dying to wear somewhere.
And Richard, you told us you're going to wear one of your best bow ties.
Yes, I will.
Have you had a chance to see the Grand Theater?
Well, I only I've seen the exterior. I'm going to see it on Tuesday, I think, once I get there, on the interior.
Boy, the interior is just stunning. And as somebody who's gone to concerts there, the beautiful part of this is there isn't a bad seat in the house, and the acoustics are just wonderful. You know, there are no echoes. And even if you're sitting in the back row or you're sitting in the front row, the sound is the same. It's really pretty phenomenal. Are a lot of those old movie palaces and opera houses built that way, Richard?
Yes. No, they are. These were the whole idea of the theater. It's changed rather dramatically over the years, in recent years and so forth. But really, back at the in the 19th and the early 20th century, and really up until about World War II, going to the theater was, the environment was just as much a part of the experience as what it was if you were seeing on stage or you're watching in the movie. I mean, if you go back and you look at these interiors and, of course, the lobbies and all of that, you were walking into, might say, quote, the common man's Versailles, that it was intended very much, and that was really one of the attractions. And so you do have this these tremendous a lot of theaters from then, and of course they've been in there, a lot of them are really threatened or have disappeared.
We have a situation in Stevens Point right now where their old theater, their old opera house, the Fox Theater, has lain dormant for decades now, and they're trying to raise the money to restore it and bring it back as a vibrant part of that community, as a focal point. And meanwhile, the owners are keeping it from falling apart. They keep the heat on. They do all of these things. So, even having an old building like this lay dormant without getting the money to renovate it immediately, that's expensive.
Yes, yes. No, that is. They're a real problem. And, there's major efforts going on, but we're also losing some of them. So that's what's so wonderful about the Grand. And also is being able to be melded into something that was larger, like the Arts Block and so forth.
We want to touch briefly on the Fromm Brothers estate in Hamburg. That's another bit of history. The Fromm Brothers pioneered the cultivation of ginseng, and they also pioneered fur farming with these beautiful silver mink that they raised there. And they had people coming in from all over the country to rural Hamburg in Wausau, where they auctioned off, north of Wausau, where they auctioned off all these foxes. I said mink. I meant to say foxes. I think they dabbled in mink, too, but they focused on foxes. There's an effort right now, Richard, to preserve that estate and to make it part of our history.
Yes. No, I have to admit I've not visited. I am going to visit when I'm there, and I'm including some pictures in my talk because it is an interesting, it's an interesting combination of buildings reflecting, I think, different attitudes about architecture and meanings and so forth. And then there's the history of course, the fox farming and all of that.
And a lot of these old buildings are indeed more than just concrete and wood and brick. they're actually ties to our past, ties to our collective identity, our culture.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the point, is that architecture is a method of expressing identity. And it has many different uses and so forth, from just the basic of shelter through function, but also it says something. Whether it has a giant sign on the front that says, you know, this is the biggest discount place in the world, or it has columns and capitals and classical details, that it's attempting to be something that is very, very American, such as Frank Lloyd Wright or George Mayer. You have several wonderful Frank Lloyd Wright houses there, but also George Mayer, who is a major Prairie School architect.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these different attempts. But, I mean, in the history of the world, architecture is one of the primary ways in which we know a little something about the Egyptians or about the Greeks or about Rome, really comes through the architecture.
Now, Richard, you said on America's castles, Frank Lloyd Wright is the greatest architect of the 20th century, American or European or worldwide. There is no equal to Frank Lloyd Wright. Why is that?
Well, several reasons. He was a genius. I should say also he had an ego that allowed him to, as he once said, this is in a television interview, better honest arrogance than false humility. but he also did have a vision about architecture and was able to project it. More than 500 of his designs were actually built. I think there's a little less than 400 that are still standing.
And we have a number of them in central Wisconsin.
Yes.
And in Wausau.
Yes. And, of course, he is a Wisconsin boy. Born down in Spring Green, Taliesin East. That's where he comes from. And in a sense, he's always rooted to, I think, the Wisconsin rural. While he is off in Chicago, and, of course, one of the buildings he's best known for, the Guggenheim Museum on Fifth Avenue in New York City. But if you look at that building, you can tell that this is not a basic New York architect. It's like this sort of Tom or something, you know, mm-hmm. Floating down the avenue there, you know, this huge round sort of thing. So he was out to express things, but also what he did want to express is he said that we should be American. We shouldn't be just importing all of this European stuff. And that's what I think has made him... As I say, I think, you know, he's one of the greats, and there's no doubt about that. But that isn't to say that because of him, we shouldn't be looking at other buildings. I don't think, bluntly, he'd like the Grand Theater too much, but...
Mary?
Yes, I guess we're transitioning a bit to another topic. Mm-hmm. When Richard was here last time in 2008, he did tour the St. Anthony Retreat Center, or as it's now known, St. Anthony Spirituality Center. So he had the opportunity to visit that and loved it, especially the cloistered areas. And he also had the opportunity to tour the private graveyard in the back where many of the brothers are buried.
The Fromm brothers.
Pardon me, this is St. Anthony Retreat Center.
Oh, the brothers from St. Anthony,
the brothers,
I'm sorry.
The friars. Mm-hmm. They like to be called brothers rather than friars.
Right.
But, right, it was the graveyard for St. Anthony Retreat Center. So I know Richard appreciated that property. And I find it so fascinating. It was built in 1917, and it was built up here in the north because the order was trying to get away from the flu epidemic in Milwaukee because so many of the brothers and priests were dying from the flu. So they were trying to get into more pristine air and better air quality.
And Richard, there is fear right now that that retreat center is going to be a thing of the past because, once again, it's too expensive for the current people who use them to maintain it.
Yes, no, it's the issue that they're facing there is being faced across the country, both with monastic types of orders in the Catholic Church, but also simply with churches. Some of the great landmarks in any town, any city in this country are the churches that were erected, whether you go back to the 18th century, but particularly the 19th century was a period, and the population is, or the attendance is dwindling, and it's a real problem. It's a major preservation issue of what to do with something like St. Anthony.
No, it looks like they're going to lose the convent to a parish in Stevens Point because it's simply too expensive to maintain and fix it up. We're going to have to take a short break, but before we do, I want to touch on one more thing with Frank Lloyd Wright and his Prairie School, and that's the relationship to something that's very near and dear to the hearts of people in central Wisconsin, and that's arts and crafts. You write about how the Prairie School is tied in with the arts and crafts movement. How is that?
Well, the arts and crafts movement was initially sort of an English invention that then comes over to this country beginning in the 1880s. And Frank Lloyd Wright was one of the founders of the second oldest, or the second arts and crafts society in this country. It was founded in Chicago in October 1897. He was one of the founders of it. One of his most important talks, The Arts and Crafts of the Machine, was given there. It was actually founded at Jane Addams' Hull House, which was a settlement community for helping to bring the disadvantaged up. And that is one of the elements of the arts and crafts movement, is that it is not just making nice things, but also there's a social aspect to it. And so he was very much a part of the arts and crafts movement, and his architecture, I think, is aligned with it. It depends where you are in the country. You have very different arts and crafts expressions and so forth, but he's very, very much aligned with it.
Richard Guy Wilson, who will be appearing at the Grand Theater. It's a free presentation in conjunction with the kickoff of their capital campaign to renovate this beautiful architectural treasure in downtown Wausau. It's this Wednesday, October 2nd. We also have with us today Jim O'Connell, the Executive Director of the Performing Arts Foundation, and Mary Roberts, a community volunteer with the Grand Theater Foundation. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support for WPR comes from UWSP Adventure Tours, presenting Cyclovia, Wisconsin, a bicycle pedestrian event along a 7-mile loop in Stevens Point, with Zumba, kayaking, a kid zone, and more. Details at cycloviawisconsin.com.
And Richard Guy Wilson, we just heard a public service announcement there for Birds and Art, an exhibit at the Leoki Woodson Art Museum, which is a repurposed historical house on Wausau's east side, the old Woodson family manor.
Yes. And yes, it's a very interesting house, and is part of what we might call the Prairie School. And, they say George Washington Mayer did a lot of buildings in Wausau. He is a part of the Chicago Prairie School or Arts and Crafts movement, not as perhaps quite as dramatic as Frank Lloyd Wright, yet a tremendous architect and did some beautiful work and beautiful interiors.
I want to touch on another architectural treasure in Wausau that's lain dormant, and it's one of the things that's really connected with our history, the Wausau Club, which is where the Wausau group, the people who actually created our current diversified economy, the old lumber barons who took us from the 1800s to the 1900s, they met there, they cut deals there. It was a meeting place up until about 10 years ago, and now it has lain dormant. How often have you seen things like that happen?
Too frequently. It's a problem of so many different buildings and different problems and so forth that are facing. And it's a very interesting building, and but hopefully something will happen.
Mary?
Yes, I'd like to comment a bit. Glenn, you're correct. It has been dormant for about 14 years. It closed in 2004. There is a lot of sadness about this. People always ask me about it whenever they see a truck unloading something in the front of it. They ask, what's going on? Is something going to be done or restored? It does have its issues because, you know, the building has some problems with asbestos. It's an old building. And investors have been looked for. It is owned by a private individual, and investors have been sought, but these have been difficult times with our deep recession. I know the city has an interest, and most people would like to see it preserved because of its history, but it will be a challenge, particularly things such as no parking. But it does, or very limited parking, but it does grace our downtown, and it's across from some very beautiful churches, including the St. John the Baptist Episcopal Church. So we're hoping Richard will have some ideas from being in many other cities, perhaps about what happened to ideas other towns had for repurposing a private club or buildings where the usage was no longer relevant. We're looking to Richard for ideas and even possible funding sources. So
it makes sense to open a restaurant there or a club or you know, there's an old ballroom, chandeliers, you know, it's a part of our history. Jim O'Connell, another part of our history, the Grand Theater, Richard Guy Olson is going to be appearing there this Wednesday, October 2nd, in the kickoff to your Capitol campaign. If you just joined us, he will be speaking for free. It's open to the public. It's your chance to see this amazing man and hear his comments about America's rich architectural history. But you're well on your way with the Capitol campaign already, correct?
I'm delighted to say that we started floating the idea about 2 years ago that we needed to continue to reinvest in the Grand Theater in order to keep it going into the future. As I said, in the 11 years since the last restoration, more than 1 million people have used the facility. So rather than have them use it up, we needed to identify the things that we might need to fix over the next 5 to 10 years. We identified more than 30 projects. The total costs of those would be about $3 million. We've already raised $2.4 million. So we are inviting the public to come and see what we have already done with the limestone in the front of the building, replacing some of the deteriorated limestone, and with our new sound system. So we're preserving buildings, we're enhancing the audience experience, and we're well on our way. We invite the public to help us continue the journey.
And moving it right into the 21st century.
Exactly.
Richard Guy Wilson, isn't that the key to historical preservation, finding 21st century uses for 20th century, maybe even 19th and 18th century structures?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you do have to, functions of buildings change dramatically, what we do in buildings and so forth. We've spread out we now are a suburban nation, but still some of the great buildings are there downtown, and they have to be saved.
Richard Guy Wilson, thank you so much for joining us today, and we are really excited to have you back in Wausau, and we hope you're as successful with the Grand Theater as you were with the Yawkey House back in 2008. And thanks so much for making yourself available today for this program.
Well, I'm delighted, and I'm looking forward to my visit next week.
This old house once knew my children, this old house once knew my wife. This old house was home and comfort as we fought the storms of life. This old house once rang with laughter, this old house heard many shouts. Now she trembles in the darkness when the lightning walks about.
Ain't gonna need this house no longer, ain't gonna need this house no more.
Ain't got time to fix the shingles, ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time to oil the hinges, not to mend the window pane. Ain't gonna need this house no longer, I'm a-getting ready to make the same.
We want to thank today's guest, Richard Guy Wilson, who holds the Commonwealth Professor's Chair of Architectural History at the University of Virginia, Jim O'Connell, Executive Director of the Performing Arts Foundation, and Mary Roberts, Community Volunteer with the Grand Theater Foundation. A reminder, Richard Guy Wilson will be giving a free public presentation next Wednesday evening, October 2nd, at the Grand Theater in downtown Wausau in connection with the kickoff of their capital campaign. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Simon and Garfunkel, Hank Williams, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and Stuart Hamblin. Next week on Route 51, we delve into the changes coming to America's healthcare system with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. We'll have representatives of Aspirus Healthcare, the Marshfield Clinic's Security Health Plan, which will be offering policies on the new insurance exchanges, and also North Central Healthcare and the Bridge Community Clinic of Wausau, where they're wrestling with tens of thousands of people in our state who are losing Badger Care coverage because of the governor's refusal to take federal money. Reminder to follow us on Facebook. This show will be rebroadcast Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.